This is your brain on risk. This is Mind Over Money, the podcast where Kevin Cook exposes the psychology of investing.
Welcome back to Mind Over Money. I'm Kevin Cook, your field guide and storyteller for the fascinating arena of behavioral economics. Most of us are still adjusting to work from home life, if we are so fortunate, as both workers and investors. If software was beginning to eat the world before the pandemic, as Marc Andreessen famously quipped years ago, it has by now swallowed half of it in just a few months. In July, I put together a presentation about the acceleration in digital demands caused by the remote work imperative. The 2-minute article and 10-minute video are titled Software Goes Stratosphere on Planet COVID. As always, you'll be able to find all the links and other content I mention in the article version of this podcast on Zacks.com. But for some areas of the economy, there is no software vaccine. I'm thinking mostly of restaurants, where thousands of small businesses have had to close and millions of workers have had their livelihoods taken away. I worked in restaurants for 15 years in my teens and 20s, so I can imagine with a heavy heart the multitude of struggling families without work or much hope. And then there are brick and mortar retail stores with varying degrees of closure and layoffs. In the past month, I've still been able to go to a Kohl's and a Menards in Southeast Wisconsin, and it seems like those stores should have no trouble surviving, even if traffic is lighter. But we know that many smaller stores and specialty shops won't make it. For some, making the adaptation to selling mostly online is not so challenging. For others, in industries I haven't even imagined, maybe going online is not an easy option. And yet, crisis breeds adaptation and potentially newfound success. I recently invested in two companies who help small businesses build their online store, Shopify and BigCommerce. As I learn more about the customers of these e-commerce mega platforms, I expect to be amazed by the different types of businesses that can sell online, from specialty foods to hair care at home. I was already surprised that Ben & Jerry's has a store on BigCommerce. I don't know if they're shipping ice cream, but I'm going to find out. All this investigation led me to conclude that while the work-from-home transformation is obvious, with dramatic and permanent changes to society and the economy, I'm not sure what the major and lasting impacts have been on shop from home. Since my podcast is about economic behavior, I am deeply interested in how shopping and e-commerce will evolve with technology. Years ago, I learned that Apple and Facebook would eventually change shopping with augmented reality and virtual reality. But that is still slow to happen. If we look to China, we may see first when AR and VR will become mainstream platform technologies for shopping, as they tend to lead in these evolutions. Right now in China, live streaming shopping events are the rage, sort of like a QVC with influencers and an app. But what I'm really curious about right now is what stores, big and small, are adapting and thriving in the shop from home environment. Since this is not an area of expertise for me, I thought I'd bring in someone for whom it is. Today, my guest is Madeline Johnson, the Zacks Income Investor Strategist, editor of the Money Sense Personal Finance Newsletter, and our resident millennial guru of retail. We're going to find out who's winning in clothing, furniture, entertainment, and any other categories Maddie believes are noteworthy. Maddie, welcome to Mind Over Money.
Hello, Kevin. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Now, in November, you wrote a special report for Zacks Confidential about shopping for retail stocks for the holidays with a focus on the luxury market. Because even if we don't shop the top of the pyramid, there's no reason we can't make money on investing in those who do. And two of your top picks were Tapestry and Capri. But these stocks have literally doubled since September. So what I want to know is, first of all, I want to know who Tapestry and Capri are, because I mean, now I know because I read your report. But at first, when I saw those names, I really had no idea who they were. And so I want to know, were they always shop from home savvy?
No. So So the biggest thing with luxury right now, like I said in the report, it's acquisition and bigger companies scooping up smaller companies. So Tapestry is Coach, Kate Spade, and Stuart Weitzman, and Capri. And when Tapestry like changed their name, I think we were all discussing way back when in the office that the only, like, the first thing that comes to mind is that Joni Mitchell song, and not like handbags and shoes. But regardless, it seems to have worked out for Tapestry Inc. And then Capri is Michael Kors, Versace, and Jimmy Choo. I think, like with any kind of like luxury brand and retail brand that serves an upper middle class to upper class customer, like in like that certain tax bracket, they didn't necessarily need to be online savvy, because those types of customers, they regularly shopped in store. They had a stylist and an associate that they always worked with. That associate knew their style, their size, and they would like pull things for them in store. Then they would like, the customer would come in and buy what they needed to buy and then like leave. And it was always like a fun like activity. So there was never really any necessity to be online savvy, like you said. Of course, this year that changed dramatically. And these companies and these brands already had a dedicated website, so to speak. And you could also find their stuff like through websites like Farfetch and department store online sites too. But a long answer to your question is no. And this year changed everything.
So these stocks have just rocketed. I took a look at the charts and I can't believe that they've doubled since September.
It's
so investors must be anticipating just a massive holiday shopping quarter. Do you think that they're going to be rewarded or disappointed by the sales that come through?
That's a good question, because just like looking at for like Black Friday sales, like alone this year, it was like $9 billion online. Now I don't know like what the breakdown is, like how much like people were buying like $450 handbags or $1,000 pair of stilettos. And I don't think shareholders will be disappointed, because I think like this rebound this year is only going to turn into a rebound, like an even greater rebound next year.
Okay.
And that not just for like these two stocks, but I really think for retail in general, it's going to be an exciting time next year, I think.
In your report, one thing I liked was you showed these pyramid diagrams, which sort of highlighted the jungle of retail from mass market on up to accessible luxury, which is kind of what Kors has always been. Mm-hmm. And then the top tiers, you know, aspirational and beyond. It seems like the Kors and Versace merger is sort of an attempt to grab a broader spectrum of consumers. Is that right?
Yeah. Cause I mean, Versace, I mean, that's like such an iconic luxury fashion brand with like Gianni Versace, who tragically died in the 90s, and you have Donatella. I mean, it's just like, it's Versace, like, you know, it's like there's name recognition, there's brand loyalty, and it was a really smart buy for Michael Kors turned Capri, just to kind of round out their brand portfolio.
I told you yesterday when we were kind of going over some notes that I wanted to talk about Stitch Fix, which I don't really know that much about. And I didn't even know they were reporting earnings, quarterly earnings last night. The stock is up over 40% today.
It's crazy.
Now, is Stitch Fix considered a luxury service? And do they help brands like Tapestry and Capri reach more and more loyal customers?
Yes and no. So Stitch Fix, it's a styling service where you pay, I believe, a monthly fee to get like a curated box of clothes and accessories like shipped to you. And I believe it's on a monthly basis, but I'm sure you can like be like, oh, I only want a box every quarter or something like that. And then once you get that box, you'll be like, oh, this shirt and this pair of shoes worked for me. Great. I'm going to buy them. And then you can send the rest back. And what you do is, when you set up your account, you decide, you like choose like which brands you like, what's your size, what's your style, are you shopping for more athleisure, or are you shopping for more work from the office type of clothes. So this type of service and this type of like business is only going to, it's only going to benefit companies like Tapestry and Capri. There's no like wrong, or there's no negative impact for them.
Yeah. And obviously the pandemic just, you know, it created opportunities for a lot of companies, even as it hurt other businesses. But Stitch Fix is definitely benefiting from this. And ironically and sadly, you know, we just were reminded of maybe the guy who invented this. The founder of Zappos tragically died recently. And I mean, you know, 15 years ago, he comes up with, hey, we're going to, you can order shoes online. And, you know, like who would ever do that? I thought, but right. Obviously a lot of women said, hey, as long as I can return them with no questions asked anytime, I'll order shoes online. And so, I forget how to pronounce Tony's last name. He was Taiwanese, died tragically last week. He was way ahead of his time with this idea that order it online and ship it back anytime at no cost, no questions, right?
Right. Totally agree. Do you remember when Amazon bought Zappos?
It was
a while ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It seemed like, why is Amazon buying this shoe store? But,
you know, I kind of always forget about Zappos, to be honest. I have bought a few pairs of shoes in the past, but I was never like a loyal customer because I ended up always buying shoes elsewhere. And Amazon also owns ShopBop.com, which is another ShopBop.
Never heard of it.
It's an online platform for like clothes and shoes and accessories. The price point is like mid to high. Well, I would say like mid luxury, because I mean, you can buy or you can spend $20 on a T-shirt while also spending $1,000 on a pair of boots.
So I'm also curious about how traditional brick and mortar high end has adapted. And the two companies I think of there are Restoration Hardware, which is now just called RH, like its stock symbol,
right.
And Ulta Beauty Salons, whatever. I mean, those businesses seem so store centric. And yet RH is at all time highs. I haven't looked at how Ulta is doing, but how have they adapted?
So Ulta, their e-commerce business has been growing for the past few years. And I feel like just like with Sephora, which is their main competitor, and Sephora is owned by LVMH, they have just started, I think they've just taught their customers to utilize their website and the app. I'm a big app shopper for Ulta and Sephora. And when the pandemic hit earlier this year and everything shut down, I was on their apps, like buying what I needed, like skincare wise, hair wise, so I wouldn't have to go to the store. So for Ulta, it was very like an easy transition because like that part of their business was growing so steadily over the past few years. Now with RH, that is kind of, it's interesting to me because their business model has been so solely focused on their stores. They call them the galleries, right?
Like right. They're not just a showroom. It's like going to an art gallery, right?
Yes. And like you go and you walk with the store associate and you'd be like, oh, wow, this couch is so great. I would love it for my home. And then they like order it up for you. But I mean, with people staying home all the time, they're looking around their house. They're being like, wow, my home decor sucks. I want all new things. And then they can just go. And if you have the money and you can go to rh.com or like call up, I'm sure, someone on customer service and be like, hey, I want this couch. I want this coffee table, you know, charge it and send it to me. So I feel like they have really benefited from that. Just like people wanting to revamp their space.
Oh yeah, totally. This is all making sense now because we know that Home Depot and Lowe's did well, you know, in the spring. Why? Because people are spending all this time at home. And they want their home to be nice and they're getting ready for gardening and that. The other thing I just thought of, have you ever heard of this thing on Twitter called Raider Room?
No.
Okay. So like, and you and I, we do video from home. You know, and if you know, you have to, it's not just being on a Zoom call. It's like sometimes you're on TV or something. So people are looking at, well, how cool is their background in the room behind them? And if you ever watch an interview on CNBC with like a CEO, of course they have this, you know, they're in their gorgeous study and there's these deep, dark grain woods. and you can tell that's a $12,000 couch from RH, that kind of thing. So, you know, I'm sure somebody on Twitter started a thing called Rate a Room, like give a rating to how excellent or not the person's room is where they're doing their Zoom call or their TV interview from. So I bet you it sort of raised the bar. Like if you were a CEO, like get over to RH now and get me this.
Yes. X. I don't want to sit in front of something embarrassing. And it makes me think of, so I had to do a video for Zach's Ultimate for Zest yesterday. Uh-huh. And I was trying to figure out the best place where I would one have light, and two, my background is not that embarrassing.
So right, that's the big challenge is lighting versus the background. And yes. It's a trade-off.
So the place where I ended up sitting was on the one side of my island where I have like fantastic like Western light. Like it's so good. And yesterday was so gloomy, but you couldn't really tell. But the background was like my entire kitchen. And it's really dark and the lighting is crappy and you see like wine bottles on the top of my fridge. And I'm just like, we need to blur this. Like this can't be a distraction.
Yeah. It's tough. Especially when you see some of these setups that people have, it's so hard to compete there,
right?
But compete they will. And that's why Restoration Hardware is at all time highs near $475. And I was just looking at, they actually report tomorrow, December 9th. So that will be interesting. And I was just looking at their sales. So $9 billion market cap now. But they're approaching $3 billion in sales. So on a price to sales basis for a luxury brand, 3x sales is not that expensive. And they're obviously still killing it. Their sales growth isn't fantastic this year. It's only 6%. But they've really turned on the earnings spigot somehow. They're going to have like 49% EPS growth this year to over $17 a share. So that'll be an exciting report to watch tomorrow. So you mentioned Sephora as sort of a online high-end cosmetics competitor for Ulta. One thing I found interesting is that Sephora uses Shopify too. Now I'm sure Sephora has their own website, but why would they also use a Shopify e-commerce store, do you think?
I mean, Shopify is such a good platform for small and medium-sized businesses. Like you said before, it makes setting up a website easy. It makes maintaining the website easy. And I think those same things apply to like a huge company and business like Sephora, because I mean the cost of hiring a website development team is massive, and then not only like the initial cost but then the salaries of those web developers, I mean that I feel like that would eat at the company's bottom line. So just to have a thing or a platform like Shopify, it's easy to maintain. It's easy. It's teachable. Like so people like you and me would probably be able to learn how to update a website on Spotify, make changes. And I think that's like the biggest draw for a company like Sephora to use Spotify and not like some outside web developer.
Yeah. And you know, another thing I just thought of is if all of a sudden your sales go from 50% online to 90% online, then you have all this risk for being online. Mm-hmm. So what if your home website goes down but maybe you're still up on Shopify, you know, then you don't lose as much sales. So it's kind of that
exactly.
Kind of a redundancy thing.
Yeah. And so many brands utilize this kind of a little pivot, but so many brands utilize social media now for business announcements that if they had like a dual, if they had like two websites or it would be easy for them to be like, hey, please use X website, please use our Instagram account to like buy what you need. And Shopify just, it's here to stay.
Yeah, that's why I was excited to find this little company called BigCommerce, which is.
And I had never heard of that before.
Yeah, I call them the little Shopify because they're just it's basically the same thing. And they've got Ben and Jerry's and they've got Skull Candy as customers. But I think the real thing to me there is, you know, I don't expect to see the Fortune 500, you know, all migrating to Shopify or BigCommerce. The real appeal of that is that the small business person, the somebody who's, you know, who had a store or makes something or, you know, sells something, you know, like just like what Etsy does for the little person. Mm-hmm. That's what's mm-hmm. exciting is that they can set up a store in a day and get out to the entire planet.
Right. And you made a good point. You're not going to see, like, this is a dumb example, but you're not going to see Amazon switch to Shopify, obviously, or like Kroger switch to Shopify. It's going to be companies like, for all of their drama, it's going to be like Kylie Cosmetics, who are raking in the big dollars. And they're not necessarily, I mean, her brand is probably a large business at this point. It's not really small or medium size, but she's probably going to still stick to something like Spotify, where she can, or the business can not only negotiate fees, but they can use like multiple types of payments, like credit card and debit and Afterpay or whatever. And
or Bitcoin, maybe.
Or Bitcoin. Yeah. So like Shopify, it's not, there's few limitations for a company that's fast growing.
Yeah. So, you know, since millions are still out of work and some businesses, you know, like small and privately owned restaurants have been devastated, I don't want to focus entirely on luxury. I want to talk about where, you know, the rest of us still shop. I was looking for a new dress shirt recently and I needed it quick. I didn't want to order online, which I probably, if I had thought a week ahead, I would have done that. But, I for some reason I dropped into a Marshalls or a Ross Stores, and there's nothing there for somebody who's 6'2". You know, tall men cannot shop at those discount stores. There's just nothing there. Yeah. So I was like, oh wait, let's go see if the Kohl's is open. And this is in Kenosha, Wisconsin. So I go over to the Kohl's and I was just like, oh my God, fantastic selection of big and tall dress shirts and amazing prices. I was just like, I had the best experience. I actually went back the next day and bought more shirts. Because I had so much fun shopping there. So it seems like, you know, maybe Kohl's survives. What about Macy's? What about even a, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond or a Best Buy? Where do you see happening to all these stores in the next year? Does you know, if the economy comes back and everybody goes back to work we're not in shutdown and the vaccines work, then these businesses survive, right?
Oh, yeah. So a little personal anecdote, I think I've told you this before, but I used to work at Banana Republic for like, I left in 2015, but I was there for almost 3 years. And it kind of how you opened the segment where there's so many people out of work, and it makes me think how different my life could be if I was still in retail. Like I might not have a job. I might not have my apartment, like all these things. And it really, this year really put that into perspective for me. But because I worked at Banana Republic, I'm a loyal Gap Inc. shopper for sure. And I was in the store a few weeks ago for one of their recent friends and family sales. I bought a few sweaters and I was talking to some of my old coworkers who are still there. And it honestly was wild to me how much the store experience changed this year, just compared to not only when I worked there, but when I like visited last year, where there's so much more emphasis on online shopping, on shopping on the app, on buying online and picking up in store. And they have like a dedicated like space. Like this is on the Michigan Avenue, like main store here in Chicago, where you can like buy something online or on the app, and then you just pick it up in store and like see if it even fits. And if it doesn't, you can return it, yada, yada, yada. And how many people, how many people's jobs changed within the store to not only fulfill those orders. And it made me think how many people at other brands had been hired this year just to fulfill these online orders, and how kind of like the emphasis of the store experience, while still very important for apparelers like Banana and Gap and J. Crew, and like that is still experienced or still emphasized, but now it's online focused. And I don't think that is going to change.
Right. Because honestly, you know, we're going to have a vaccine here that a couple of vaccines that will, you know, we'll look back and go, man, we got through that. But it doesn't mean there won't be another new novel coronavirus in the future. I mean, these things, the coronavirus is a, you know, it's a virus that mutates from animals, and it can happen again, just like the first SARS. So yeah, a lot of these businesses who are thinking, what do we do for the next 5 to 10 years? They're saying we need to establish a strong online presence forever.
Yes. And I mean, I think thankfully, and I think we can attribute this to the, like basically it's the Amazon effect, right? Whenever, once they implemented Prime, once they implemented free 2-day shipping, that changed the game for everyone. Department stores, apparelers, like it doesn't matter. Like now we expect, oh, I want this shirt within 2 days and it needs to be free. Otherwise, I might not buy it, even if shipping is only $5 or something.
Right.
And I think heading into next year and what we've seen this year in retail companies and their ability to bounce back from like utter devastation earlier this year is kind of, it's very impressive and kind of astounding. And it makes me want to shake all the people who still think like there's a retail apocalypse, the retail is dead, yada, 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 because that's just not the case. And yes, like a company like Macy's, if they're gonna get hurt, like they are gonna experience negative impacts, but they're not gonna go away. They're still a multi-billion-dollar corporation. It's just shopping at Macy's is just gonna be different. You're gonna shop more online. Maybe more stores will close, but it's just they're not gonna disappear.
Right. And what I'm really interested in is how do employees adapt? You know, if somebody enjoyed working in retail or enjoyed working in restaurants, you know, what's their next move? And so, you know, there's a lot of short-term pain here for a lot of people. But I'm hoping that that crisis helps people adapt and be more creative. You know, maybe somebody always wanted to start a business. Maybe they've been making furniture or baking pies, you know, forever. And maybe it's time for them to have a Shopify store where, you know, they can sell what they make to the world, or get better educated and maybe learn a new skill, hopefully from home.
Yeah.
So when we didn't even talk about that aspect, but, I want to close with, one of your recommendations in your retail luxury report last week was Canada Goose. I think the stock symbol is GOOS. I've never bucked up for one of those coats. I don't really need one. I have a good parka that I wear on my farm in Wisconsin. But when I hear more about the quality, that it's not just a fashion thing. This is like super high quality that these coats can last, you know, for a decade or something. Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. I mean, when Canada Goose was first launched, I mean, the coats were specifically made for people working in like the Arctic or deep, like North Canada or basically Minnesota, where it just gets like really crazy cold. It was not a fashion statement until very recently. And now, I mean, I don't have a Canada Goose coat. I don't think I'll ever get one because I just don't want to pay $1,000 for a coat. I might pay $1,000 for a handbag. But
see, now I would have guessed you had one, Maddie.
No, every winter in Chicago, it is the coat to have, and you see it everywhere. So when I'm like out and about, like before this, like commuting to work, I'll see them and I'll be like, yeah, do I need a coat though? Like, do I need that one coat? And then you start looking and you look at price and you're just like, I just can't do it. I just can't do it.
One thing I was curious about is if I was thinking, okay, luxury coat makers benefit from, you know, we've got a roaring stock market. So there's this wealth effect where a lot of people can afford, you know, a $1,000 coat or more. And then I'm thinking about like people who really could use a nice warm coat like that in Chicago or Minneapolis, who, you know, will never be able to afford it. So I just, this morning I started Googling, like, do any of these guys do any kind of charitable donations with coats? And I found that the North Face has a program. I forgot what they call it, but the whole idea is, they call it Close the Loop, and close as in clothing, where they encourage people internationally, please bring in your old coats. Don't, you know, definitely don't throw them out. Bring them in and we'll get them to people who need them. So I thought that was kind of cool. And then I was just looking up like other sort of coat drives things. You can go to onewarmcoat.org and find out locally where you can donate an old coat. So, if, you know, if anybody's thinking about buying a new winter coat, I know in the Midwest, it hasn't gotten real cold yet, but we know it's coming.
Yeah.
We know what January and February are like.
And so. I want to mention Burlington Coat Factory.
Okay.
I think they do this every year. They do, I think it's called Coat Drive. And if you donate a coat, you get 10% off your next purchase.
Nice.
Through like the holiday season. So that's always a really good incentive for people to donate. And then other people in need get to stay warm. So.
Absolutely. And then one more interesting thing I found was OperationWarm.org. They actually they have their own branded coat that they make. And, you know, they get corporate donations and whatnot. Yeah, OperationWarm.org. And I don't, the coats sound pretty good. They're trying to make it almost looks like a, you know, it has that North Face sort of look, which is what kids need. And that's what they're trying to do is get them to kids who need them. So, the coat drive one was onewarmcoat.org. So, I just wanted to end on a warm note in our discussion of all things retail and luxury. And Maddie, thanks so much for joining me on Mind Over Money.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I love talking about retail. So.
Yeah, we'll have to take a look in earnings season, like in February, about, you know, who the big winners were for the Q4 holiday season.
Definitely. Can't wait.
All right. Talk to you soon.
This material is being provided for informational purposes only, and nothing herein constitutes investment, legal, accounting, or tax advice, or a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold a security. Do not act or rely upon the information and advice given in this podcast without seeking the services of competent and professional legal, tax, or accounting counsel. Publication and distribution of this podcast is not intended to create, and the information contained herein does not constitute, an attorney-client relationship. No recommendation or advice is being given as to whether any investment or strategy is suitable for a particular investor. It should not be assumed that any investments in securities, companies, sectors, or markets identified and described were or will be profitable. All information is current as of the date herein and is subject to change without notice. Any views or opinions expressed may not reflect those of Zacks Investment Research as a whole.